long hard days. They don't say God's changed my ways, changed my ways, those evil. So I set out across that way to strike them down, to make them pay and change their ways, their evil ways. But I can't.
Top of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Friday, November 1st, 2019. And talking about the subject of democratic socialism, the Fabian Society, and, you know, the peripheral discussions, the way that education had to be prepared in advance, as the Rees Committee pointed out in the 1950s, to endorse things like socialism, collectivism, and a reordering of the thought, and really just a rewiring of the American mind at large, away from rugged individualism and individual rights, inalienable rights, the laws of nature and nature's God, as Blackstone what's the word? Starts with an E, can't think of it. Anyway, elaborated is close enough. So I suppose we'll open this hour with a quote. Larry sends me this quote. Antonio Gramsci is quoted by Joseph Joseph Furnia in his Gramsci's Political Thought, Hegemony, Consciousness, and the Revolutionary Process, published back in 1981. Anyway, the quote is, and it's been widely quoted by folks, you can find many articles on it. It's interesting. One of the articles in the American Thinker, what left-wing ideology, a cult, a religion, or science? And again, this gets back to the Rees Committee hearings, because they dealt with the issue of social sciences and how they've tried to masquerade the social sciences as a physical science. Just, you know, it's just as fact-based as the physical sciences, but that's not the case. And the religious undertones. Anyway, from this article, May 5, 2019, Left-Wing Ideology, a Cult, a Religion, or a Science, by Gary Gindler. More than 100 years ago, prominent Marxist Antonio Gramsci wrote, socialism, and this he wrote in 1915, socialism is precisely the religion that must overwhelm Christianity. Socialism is a religion that in the sense that it is a religion in the sense that it is to a faith with its mystics and rituals, religion because it has substituted for the consciousness of the transcendental God of the Catholics, the faith in man and his great strengths as a unique spiritual reality. And, you know, some of the rest of the quote, in the new order, socialism will triumph by first capturing the culture via infiltration of schools, universities, and churches, and the media by transforming the consciousness of society. That's, you know, this is Antonio Gramsci. And usually when Gramsci comes up these days, I like to include the fact that, you know, Mayor Pete is and his dad, Joseph, are Gramsciites, you know, cultural Marxism, cultural hegemony, Fordism, Nietzsche's will to power, and all that garbage. And by whatever means, you know, by whatever means. And you can see a, I mean, that's it, it's no secret when you look at Antonio Gramsci's background. And even from his Wikipedia page, Gramsci wrote more than 30 notebooks and 3,000 pages of history and analysis during his imprisonment. Prison notebooks are considered a highly original contribution of the 20th century political theory. Gramsci drew insight from varying sources, not only other Marxists, there you go, but also thinkers such as Niccolo Machiavelli, right, Vilfredo Pareto, George Sorel, Benedetto Croce, and continuing, the notebooks cover a wide range of topics, including Italian history, nationalism, the French Revolution, fascism, Fordism, civil society, folklore, religion, and high and popular culture. So it's hard to argue. I mean, right from the opening words of the Wikipedia entry, he is obsessing with Machiavellian concepts, Marxism, Fordism, the intrigue of the French Revolution, nationalism, not a good idea, these kinds of things. Anyway, Pete Buttigieg is, you know, someone that, I mean, if you think that the Obama era Alinskyite radicals were bad, just wait till the Gramsciite radicals surround someone like Mayor Pete. Anyway, this is an interesting little entry here into the socialist discussion, sort of peripheral to the Fabian discussion. This is a more radical, more direct, though through intrigue and Machiavellian, you know, intrigue and deception, still a more direct method than Fabian model, or a more immediate model, perhaps. Better way to put that. So back to the Reese Committee hearings. Speaking of the Fabian, this is not the Fabian socialist. You know, again, according to the Fabians, Fabian socialism is synonymous with democratic socialism. And these people sought to overturn the existing social order in America through intrigue and sophistry, through deception, misdirection, infiltration, and the Fabian method of gradual, incremental, you know, war of attrition, wearing the people out gradually over time, infiltrating the schools, universities, churches, etc., as Gramsci said, to infect this society with this subversive concept. So again, Aaron Sargent from the Reese Committee hearings. Here then briefly is a chronology of the subversive movement. Actually backing up, he says, he's asked, you think the foundations have used their money on constructive books, but they will give great donations on the subversive type of literature and further that type of printing entirely? Sargent replied, yes, I'm convinced of it. In fact, I've been told that by people in the profession. Professor John C. Almack, formerly of the Stanford School of Education, told me one time that it is a waste of time trying to get any money from the foundations for the conservative side of the issues, that it could not be done. He was an experienced educator. And so Sargent continues, he said, here then briefly is a chronology of the subversive movement as, first of all, general background material. I will commence by talking about the Fabian socialist movement in Great Britain. And he says, you know, I have notes here. The data on this first sheet is taken from a source book, which I think is a recognized and able authority. It is the book entitled Fabianism in the Life of Great Britain. The author is Sister Margaret Patricia McCarran, the daughter of Senator Pat McCarran. you know, the Administrative Procedure Act, fourth branch, that McCarran. It is a doctoral thesis resulting in the granting of her degree of Doctor of Philosophy. It is a very extensive book based on original source material. Mr. Hayes says, you say she is a sister? Sergeant says, she is a member of a Catholic order. Hayes says, I didn't know they used her last name. Sergeant says, that is her full name. Her full name appears on the book, and that is who she is. I've read the book myself. I'm taking significant dates here to orient the British movement with the American side of the picture. The inception of the movement was the year 1883. Original Fabian group formed, composed of Thomas Davidson, Edward R. Pease, and Hubert Bland. They met in London and adopted an agreement to reconstitute society, and they adopted the name Fabian. The Fabian system briefly consisted of four elements: research to further their specific ideas, education of a propaganda type to carry it out, penetration of governmental agencies generally, legislative and executive both, and finally, the penetration carried to the point of permeation resulting in complete control of the governmental system. The following year, 1884, George Bernard Shaw joined the movement and became and was active for many years, many, many years subsequently. In 1885, Sidney Webb, Sidney Olivier, and Anna Besant became members. They established a publication known as the Fabian News in 1891. In 1892, they began active lecturing and campaigning. They elected a member of parliament that year. They moved into the university field, and in 1895, established a unit at Oxford. They founded the London School of Economics. Mr. Hayes asks, Mr. Sargent, that is all a matter of history. We know about those characters. They have been pretty well discredited down through the years. Is that so? Because you fast forward to today, some 70 or 75 years later, and that's not funny how freedom of the press is guaranteed to those who own one, right? And again, how history is being revised right before our very eyes, though at glacial speed, so most people don't notice. So continuing, Hayes says, nobody's paying much attention to them. Do you think it is fair to waste our time? Sergeant says, I think it is fair. And I agree. 75 years later, I think it's fair. They have not been discredited, Sergeant says, and they have not stopped. There is substantial evidence that the successors of that group are very intimately connected with American affairs right now. And so Hayes interrupts and says, I have heard that charge bandied about for a good many years, but it only results in somebody saying so. Nobody has ever pinned it down. Finally boils down to, well, he disagrees with me, so therefore he's no good. Sergeant says, won't you wait until I get through before you conclude that? Maybe you will change your mind. Anyway, so Sergeant continues, by 1900, the movement had entered four of the universities in Great Britain. I've referred to the federal income tax movement here. That began in 1892 with a demand for federal income tax legislation made at a time when the fiscal needs of the federal government required no such taxation. How many Americans realize that today? Some political objective must have been behind the movement at the time, because the revenue need was not there. In 1893, the Income Tax Act was passed and then repassed over a presidential veto. In 1894, the United States Supreme Court held the statute unconstitutional on the basis of the Constitution, capital C, as it then stood. The agitation continued. In 1909, Congress proposed the Income Tax Amendment to the states, and in 1913, it was adopted as the 16th Amendment to the Federal Constitution. Unlimited tax power was conferred. The effect was, as I mentioned. And Sargent continues, the radical group had that in mind. The people had a more immediate situation at hand. There were great abuses in that period that he says we are all familiar with, and reform of some type was undoubtedly due and needed. The conclusion I adopt is that a normal American movement for reform was perverted by the introduction of various things which were accepted and which became dangerous in practice and made our present situation what it is. There was a political purpose behind this amendment, obviously. The money was not needed. The idea was to give the federal government the power to take money. The power to take money was given. The power to take money became a very important part of what followed. And so continuing, he says, in the financial sense, financially speaking of, speaking of the war, well, skipping ahead. From the education standpoint, the story begins in about 1896, the establishment of the Dewey Laboratory School at the University of Chicago. That school continued until 1908. The Dewey in question here is the professor of philosophy, John Dewey, who expounded a principle which has become destructive of traditions and has created the difficulties and confusion, much of it, that we find today. Professor Dewey denied that there was any such thing as absolute truth, that everything was relative. Everything was doubtful, permanently doubtful, that there were no basic values and nothing which was specifically true. The concept was revolutionary in practice. I don't know what the good professor thought of his reasons, but the effect of it was to undermine existing props and to make possible the specific thing I refer to here, because as soon as you say there are no basic principles at all, that everything is debatable and uncertain, changeable from day to day, you automatically wipe the slate clean. You throw historical experience and background to the wind, and you begin all over again, which is just exactly what the Marxians want someone to do. And again, you know, this is the Fabian mantra, you know, that flexible system, or the communitarian mantra of reflexive policy, always responding but never remembering the past, just moving forward. And really, all it in effect does is it just creates more prison bars. As you roll forward, it's just another prison bar and another prison bar, erecting prison cells. I add parenthetically. So continuing from the Reese Committee testimony of Aaron Sargent. Therefore, John Dewey was a gift from the gods to the radicals. He was just tailor-made for this sort of situation. I haven't the faintest idea of what Dewey himself thought he was doing. I'm merely saying it happens and had this effect. And so continuing, he said, I am saying, generally agreed by philosophers, that this philosophy of John Dewey is extremely destructive in practice and made it possible to accomplish the things that were later done. It brought about the policy of attacking the American tradition. They attacked patriotism. And the American tradition. Sargent says, tradition, as in the Declaration of Independence, that is, a statute passed by the Congress and a basic document, the principle of the Declaration of Independence was directly undermined and attacked by the philosophy of John Dewey, among other things. And he goes on, one of the most fundamental concepts of all is the doctrine of inalienable rights. The fact that your rights belong to you and my rights belong to me and are not given to me by any majority in society. That we acquire those rights at birth and we get them by natural law or the laws of God. But we'll continue when we come back. Stick around. More right after this break.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
When you were here before, you couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You flow like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so very special, but I'm a creep. I'm a widow. What the hell am I doing here?
Welcome back. I might find it boring, but I think it's fascinating. It's a fascinating look back in history, and we don't realize, gosh, all the things that have already been covered. This, the discoveries of the Rees Committee were, well, I would say truly miraculous. And they should be enshrined along with the information that John Adams advocated that we gather up. So, Aaron Sargent, Continuing, he says, one of the most fundamental concepts of all is the doctrine of inalienable rights, the things that were attacked, the American traditions that were attacked. One of the most fundamental concepts of all is the doctrine of inalienable rights. The fact that your rights belong to you and my rights belong to me and are not given to me by any majority in society, that we acquire those rights at birth and we get them by natural law or the laws of God. And Hayes says, I'll go along with you. That was the first time today that you and I have been able to specifically get something down in a definition that both of us could agree on. Sergeant says, all right. Dewey throws that out. He said, not even that one. That is overboard too. The philosophy of John Dewey is a natural for radicalism because it makes everything uncertain and the subject of confusion. They deny there are such things as natural rights. They say that rights are whatever the majority say. This is the problem with democratic socialism, by the way, in a nutshell. Here today and gone tomorrow. Whatever man can give, man can take away, right? Sort of an off again Flanagan affair. Mr. Hayes asks, do you believe in laissez-faire? Sergeant replies, what do you mean by that term? Hayes replies, it is generally used in the same term, you know, the definition of it, let alone theory that the government should not interfere. Sergeant replies, no, I don't think there should be a complete want of governmental restraint. Anarchy would be the result of it. Hayes replies, there has been testimony before these hearings that there has been a plot to do away with the laissez-faire theory. Sergeant replies, that word has been booted around to a great extent. Like democracy, quote-unquote, it has been picked up by all the communist fronts, and they throw it all over the place until the word is almost useless for any practical purposes. So Hayes replies, in other words, laissez-faire democracy or any other word has certain limitations? Sergeant replies, some of those words have. Natural law means a very specific thing. I say that John Dewey's philosophy struck a mortal blow at natural law, and that is the cement which holds this country of ours together from the standpoint of religion, philosophy, and governmental policy. And again, the evidence of this is overwhelming when you go back in history. Thinking, for example, about Jefferson's bill for religious freedom, where basically, in a nutshell, to paraphrase Jefferson's bill, who was a Unitarian himself, said you have the right to practice Christianity any way you see fit. That was essentially what the bill for Jefferson's bill for religious freedom amounted to. So, continuing briefly. So again, natural law means a very specific thing, and Dewey's philosophy struck a mortal blow at natural law, and that is the cement which holds this country of ours together from the standpoint of religion, philosophy, and governmental policy. And who is learning that these days? How many young people are reading Blackstone in school? A rhetorical question. How many young people have heard of Blackstone? So Hayes replies, you and I apparently agree that John Dewey's philosophy is not the kind of philosophy with which we would associate ourselves, which is an interesting admission by Mr. Hayes. Sergeant replies, that is right, definitely. I think it is a very destructive thing and very unfortunate. And Hayes says, but you would say John Dewey did not have the right to believe that and to advocate it? Sergeant says, no, all these people had a right to advocate these things, but the foundations didn't have a right to step in and actively promote one theory and throw the rest overboard. And yeah, there's much more. We need to move on. So anyway, stick around. More right after this break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
so, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you. And in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Welcome back. Bottom of the third hour. Bottom of the third hour of today's broadcast. This Friday, November 1st, 2019. One more quick excerpt from Reese Committee testimony. We'll go to the phones. Jesse P. Walcott of Michigan. One of the three Republicans, B. Carol Reese of Tennessee, Jesse P. Walcott of Michigan, and Andrew L. Goodwin of Massachusetts. Walcott was an interesting fellow, conservative, Republican, but, you know, also Universalist or Congregationalist, member of the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Affairs, Freemasons, Elks, Knights of Pythias, Lions, Moose, Odd Fellows, you get the point. And so, but you can see the battle. I mean, think about that background, and yet this is what he said. This is what Walcott said. I'm very much interested in the subject that this witness is discussing. He said, I might say I have my own views on Fabian socialism or whatever you might call it. I think the real danger to the American system of government is not communism. The real danger to the American system of government is Fabian socialism. If any of these foundations are engaging in practices paralleling the growth of Fabian socialism in the British Empire, which resulted in the socialization of the British Empire to the prejudice of their type of democracy, then I think it is the duty of Congress, surely the members of this committee, to find out what is happening. I understand that this witness has qualified himself as more or less an expert on this matter. That's the thing we're seeking information, which he has. As far as anything else is concerned, I will let the chips fall where they may. We have to make a record here and find out what is going on. The Fabian socialists work quietly through infiltration. Remember, the wolf in sheep's clothing, right? And I would just add, you know, a good idea doesn't need force, intrigue, sophistry. A good idea should be able to be presented and discussed in plain view, should it not? The Fabian socialists work quietly through infiltration. The communists are out waving their red flags and yellow whooping and hollering and picketing. We can see that. We cannot see Fabian socialism, he said. We have to dig for it. We are in the process now, as I understand it, of digging for it. Hayes says, yes, sir, we are digging back in 1892. Walcott says that does not make any difference. The Fabian socialist movement in Great Britain went back to the turn of the century. Great names were mentioned. George Bernard Shaw was one of the greatest of Fabians in Great Britain. He has respect of millions of people. I am sure that the founders of these foundations would turn over several times in their graves if they felt that their money was being used for the destruction of the American system of government. Whether it is destroyed by socialism or communism is not the point. I think we owe them an obligation, as well as ourselves and the people whom we represent, to find out whether there is any danger to the American system and where it lies. That's the reason I'm on this committee. I would not be on the committee if I was not interested in that subject. So that I find fascinating, and you skip forward more and more, you know. Again, Walcott says, I have several other committees that take up most of my time. I cannot stand here. I have not the time to bicker about the way in which we develop the matter. We've got to do a job. It has to be done, must be done quickly. Otherwise, we are running the same course, a parallel course, to Fabian socialism, which destroyed Great Britain. I do not like it, frankly. I do not like what I see on the horizon. The sun is not coming up. It is a very cloudy day in America because of Fabian socialism. And again, Fabian socialism is synonymous with democratic socialism. This used to be a concern in America. It certainly was during the Reese Committee hearings. Again, for those interested, search the hearings for the term Fabian, and you will find no fewer than 90 matches. So I leave it to the listener to investigate further. To the phones, William in Montana, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Morning, Chris.
Morning, William.
Yeah, the one of the things about the Fabian Society is that it wasn't, you know, that was just one of the fronts.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of British intelligence apparatus was always morphing, and they were laying down a pattern that was actually, 10, 20, 30 years in the making. And very few people, everybody knows the name Aldous Huxley, but they probably don't know that he was dispatched as a case officer for an operation, a British operation, and this gets really complicated. It's very well documented. You can find it very easily. But he was sent there to sort of set the stage and prepare the U.S. for the mass dissemination of drugs. You know, he was. This was back in the 30s that he went there, and he went to, where did he go? He went to L.A. You know, well, what better place to go? Because they were watching this whole process of what was happening in L.A. and with the film industry. And they realized that in order to, the whole generation, the 60s, the LSD, all the other drugs that were released in the 60s, was basically a rinse and repeat of the British opium wars. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a great, drugs are a great way to keep a country under control and basically wipe out a whole generation. And this was planned. This was not happenstance. If you go back and look at all the lineage, you'll find that the foundation for this was actually started by Thomas H. Huxley, which, mm-hmm. Aldous Huxley was his grandson. And he was a founder of the Rhodes Round Table Group, which was a group of British scholars and intelligence officers that, they were actually acting upon the philosophy and descriptions of Arnold Toynbee. He was a member of this group, and he was also he headed up the research division of the British intelligence throughout World War II. I mean, he wasn't just like, I know who he was. He was a historian. Well, actually, he was actually setting a stage by, he said, you know what happens down through the ages, the dynasties of the pharaohs, the Roman Empire, the British Empire, if they only last for a certain time before they start falling apart. But we can stall this and maybe even reverse it, if we really watch what we're doing. And the only way we're going to do this is by intentionally using the ruling oligarchy, which was, he identified that with the British Round Table, with this whole organization out of Oxford. And he was saying, you know what you can do? We might be able to stall this, and who knows, in the future we might even find a way to reverse this so that the British Empire will not suffer the same fates as the pharaohs and Rome and stuff like that. And the way they decided to do this is they said, we have to basically train our finest. We have to identify our finest, and of course they believe that the finest were all students of the, the elite, British elite at Oxford. And so they decided to start training these initiates. And many of these initiates were names that we know, T.S. Eliot, W.H. Auden, Sir Oswald Mosley, D.H. Lawrence. I mean, and all of these people sort of flew under the cover of, literary men, writing books that were basically, to help people open up their minds. And the fact that this was being done, one of the things that happened was that, Aldous Huxley, within his books, he was basically setting the stage of saying, you know what, we can have a greater consciousness. We can learn how to turn on tune in, and then drop out. Because if you want to take over a country, if you want to keep them subservient, the one thing you have to do, you know, the dropout part is destroy the minds of a generation. Not only through drugs, but through this this whole other thing, which is called, you know, the human potential movement, which if you really look at it, when Aldous Huxley and these guys were doing this, they really said, you know what we have to do? I mean, this, you know, drugs are a real good way to basically keep people busy and take them out of becoming a part of an intelligent continuation of a culture. You know, and if you look at the 60s, you see that this was, you know, a great operation. And, you know, when Huxley, you know, went to the United States as a intelligence operative, and he went to L.A., and he became a screenwriter, you know, in the 30s, and along with some other very interesting men who were also British. And you were talking about, you know, Madame Blavatsky and Besant and all of these people that started the Theosophy Society around the same time. Well, actually, they started much earlier. But if you go in and look at this, there was a lot of interactions with who else? You know, have you ever heard the name Albert Hofmann? You know, he was a chemist at Sandoz, and that pharmaceutical house was owned by Wahlberg, S.G. Wahlberg. And if you also look into that, what was he? He was a British intelligence. And he also became very powerful in what was the British intelligence imported in the United States by called the Office, U.S. Office of Strategic Services, OSS, and that was directed by Alan Dulles. He later became the director of the CIA, and one of his great programs under his tutorage was MKUltra. And it's interesting that, you know, when you look at MKUltra and the initial setup of that, that was very much integrated with Sandoz and the use of LSD. So when you start talking about, you know, I mean, most people know these names, Aldous Huxley, T.S. Eliot, and D.H. Lawrence, and all these things, and they say, oh, they were forward-thinking, New Age writers. And yet, you know, they were basically another guy that everybody knows the name of is H.G. Wells. You know, like, oh, yeah, he wrote some interesting books. Well, he was also the person behind identifying these shining lights, this potential of British brilliance, the children of the British elite, to send them out into the world and do another British opium war on the United States. So this is, when you start digging beneath the surface, you see this, you know, the Fabian Society has tentacles, and the Fabian Society, if you really get deep into it, and I don't recommend it, it will scramble your head trying to keep everyone straight. But there were other organizations, and it was a real eye-opener to the British. World War One, when they started doing some psychological research on, you know, their motivation was how to get these guys who are shell-shocked. You know, damn it, you know, we need them on the front. And we need to find out how to get them back on the front. And this was a big project. And many of the psychiatrists and psychologists and medical professionals in England were put to this task. You know, like, we got these guys and they're just blithering and they're useless and we need them. And so in that research, they discovered this whole method of trauma-based programming, and they turned it into an art form. They turned it into a weapon.
You know? Roald Dahl's books, folks, read what he's read. That is trauma-based programming. Speaking of CIA, born out of the OSS, born out of British intelligence. You know, you get back to guys like Wild Bill Donovan. Julia Child was his secretary for a time, which is an interesting fun fact. Stevenson, Intrepid, you know, London's Man in Washington, all that kind of stuff. And speaking of what you're talking about, just briefly, I wonder if we could actually skip the break. In the interest of time. Anyway, speaking of these literaries, the Fellowship of New Life, you can go to the Wikipedia entry, folks, and see. Sure. It's a splinter group of the Fabian Society, and it says right on the Fellowship of New Life Wikipedia entry, many of the Fellowship's members, well, skipping ahead, it says, are actually backing up. According to McDonald, the Fellowship's main influences were Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. And Edward Peace was an English writer. Fabian co-founder Hubert Bland was a bank employee turned journalist. And Marx himself, you know, as guys like JFK acknowledged, had a literary career. And so many of these folks, like you said, and a lot of them have become names that are, have been central through the 20th century in America to, you know, they were central literary figures or peripheral literary figures, these names that we're mentioning, and they are part of those, you know, if not the Fabian group directly, then some of those peripheral groups and splinter groups.
Yeah, and after World War One and throughout World War Two, and we've talked in the past about Murray at Harvard and all of these experiments, you know, the creation of the Unabomber by using these techniques that were developed mm-hmm. by British intelligence. But you know, in the 50s, you know, Huxley continued with he wrote the, you know, Doors of Perception. And this was basically a manifesto of psychedelic drug cult.
Didn't he write that on drugs?
Yeah.
I think he wrote that on.
And the Ford Foundation, you know, they were basically, you know, funding a lot of this stuff. You get into the Rand Corporation, especially the office out of Santa Monica, California. Mm-hmm. They had a 4-year experiment in LSD, peyote, marijuana. And this was, you know, like if you also get into Huxley and H.G. Wells and how he tutored these initiates into the cult, you know, it goes under many different names, the cult of Isis. Aleister Crowley was also involved in that. He was also a British operative. And he was starting, and that was the, you know, the whatever it was called, the New Dawn, the Golden Age. And one of the things that they were really getting into was, you know, how to make sure that the United States stayed a colony. You know, when they came in and said, hey, boys, you know, you need an intelligence agency. You can call it whatever you want. You know, it was later called the CIA under Dulles, and they said, you know, you need to be able, because one of the things that this group did, Aldous Huxley's grandfather, one of the things he did, he said, you know, we have to create, he saw this whole thing, Arnold Toynbee and people, they said there was this great global mind, and the way in which you keep everything under control is that you have to control the mind. And what better way to control the mind? You know, the problem with trauma-based programming is it takes a lot of energy. But if you can distribute, originally they were using just barbiturates to cause this fracture of the personality, and then the, you know, they used various techniques that they learned in World War One and World War Two on how to put this back together, so you had a controllable entity. Which didn't know it was being controlled. And then they found these other drugs, and not only the drugs, and one of the things that Aldous Huxley was, I mean, he worked for Disney, you know, he was doing script writing, you know, because they said, you know, this video, this first film, and then, you know, TV was a great way, and you had to start early. So there was a big, there was not only just the promotion of the drug culture in the 60s, but there was also this, you need to start creating some really interesting cartoons so that you could put these ideas into the minds, or at least you could prepare, you could cultivate the soil for seeds that would be later planted. And, you know, if you would say, well, how is this British intelligence / Fabian, how is this operating? Well, they were going right to the core, and this was following the blueprints that Arnold Toynbee has set out in how to keep a culture from declining, an empire from declining. And it said, you have to try to figure out some way to fracture the family and get these kids under your control, and then you can start, at even through cartoons to begin with, setting the stage for producing this control of what they referred to as the global mind. And that's how you can't do it through, you know, they found out through the wars that, you know, that's kind of costly, and it's not very thorough. You know, you can't have a policeman on every corner. You can't have a soldier with an AR or, you know, over his shoulder. So one of the best ways to do it is get them early and start showing them some very controversial concepts in the cartoons, and then go from there.
It's innocuous, you know. And again, Roald Dahl, you know, and you read.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you go into, I mean, I know the, you know, I know the California 60s environment. I met many of these people, you know, Alan Watts. I was on his houseboat. And I met.
And that's Watts plural, not Watts singular, just for those who.
Right.
The distinction.
Yeah. Alan Watts. And, you know, and then all this stuff, you know, I was a very intelligent boy, and I was like, I was just lapping this up because it sounded so good. It certainly sounded a lot better than what I was being offered. You know, and then, like I say, it took me 30 years of going back just to see what had happened. You know, and I was there. You know, you say, well, you were a witness. I mean, you were there. I didn't know what was going on. This stuff was very infectious. It was very subtle, and it had been cultured. I mean, this wasn't just haphazard. I mean, this stuff was being planned in the 20s and the 30s for the effect that it was going to have in the 60s. And You got to get into this, and you got to see, you know, how influential this element is under whatever name it flies under.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
And then when you start connecting the dots, I mean, I don't know whether you should have a bowl of popcorn in your lap, or whether you should have a stiff coffee, or maybe even something a little bit stiffer, but it will blow you away, and yet you've got to know this stuff.
Yep.
You know, you have to understand the subterfuge and the many various ways in which this very insidious conditioning has been slipped into us. And you know that, you know, there's, you know, we've been through this. We've talked about, you know, the roots of the.
Oh, we're done. I didn't hear the bump out. Anyway, man, I was going to give an excerpt from the preface of Jeanette Conant's Irregulars, Roald Dahl and the British Spying in Wartime Washington, but we're out of time, folks. I hope it was informative. William, thank you, as always. Much appreciated. Have a great weekend, folks.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.